real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB. Brought to you by Mark Keitel with Realty First.
Happy Mother's Day, everybody, and welcome back to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. It is 7 minutes past the hour, 1107, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We are online with our brand new version of thinkglink.com. Take a look, thinkglink.com. It went live on Friday night. We have a couple of little glitches here and there, but I think overall you're going to find it a lot easier to find stories. Searchability is much improved, I think, and there are some really cool and exciting things there. The only thing you probably won't find very easily is the store, but you've probably already got whatever you're getting out of that at the moment. So, but everything else we think is going to be a lot easier to find. We also hope you will sign up for our free weekly newsletter, because that is the place that's going to guide you to all of the content in the ThinkLink community. All right, lots of news this week, and open for business, taking your questions now at 404-872-0750. First of all, again, happy Mother's Day to everybody. But the big news this week, I thought, was the finally a little bit of good news in the jobs market. Now, on the face of it, it doesn't actually really seem like good news. We did see an increase of 244,000 jobs, so that was good news. On the other hand, and I guess this is also good news, most of that came from the private sector, because a whole lot of people got fired in the public sector. And we did see, and this was the not-so-good part, on Thursday we did see the number of unemployed, first-time people filing for unemployment benefits rise dramatically to about 471 or 475,000. This is way over the numbers that it's been for the last 4 months. And just as all the economists were feeling pretty good about their projections for employment, Lo and behold, people are, getting unemployed at a pretty fast clip. But some other good news that we saw in the numbers, if you dig deep, you saw that people are actually getting jobs more quickly. So for private sector, I think people are only unemployed for maybe 37 to 40 weeks. This is still a long period of time. But it's better than it was. So that's a little bit of an improvement. Another little bit of negative news is we saw the national official unemployment rate rise from 8.8% to 9% for the first time in October. More than half of the job losses came from males aged 16 to 20. So that is just not some good news either. But I would say for a mixed jobs report, this one was a little better than we've seen in a while. It's nice to see some jobs being created, and very nice to see that even though there are more people filing for unemployment, the people are not unemployed for quite as long as they were. On the other hand, we're also not really seeing wages increase. Real job wages aren't increasing, and the number of hours hasn't increased. Typically, people are working 34 hours a week. That is not going up at all, and that concerns some economists, because typically the way this happens is that you make your current employees work harder and you give them overtime, because it's cheaper to pay somebody overtime than it is to actually hire somebody new. So you have somebody working overtime, you pay them time and a half or whatever it is you're going to pay them, and then you get to a point where they physically can't work anymore, right? There's only so many overtime hours that people can take. Let's say they want to work 18 hours a day and they're only going to sleep 6 hours a day. Eventually, even that becomes unsustainable. And so when your workforce gets completely maxed out, that's when factories and other kinds of companies start hiring people. And we're not quite there yet. If you're only working an average of 34 hours a week, that's got a lot of room left before companies actually start to hire people. And that's a bit of a concern. So interesting job report this week. We're going to have to wait and see what happens next week and the week after. We'd really like to see this first-time unemployment pull number go down. 470,000 is a really high number. It's not as high as 600,000, 700,000 in January of 2009, so we're not there, but we're certainly not at 250,000 or 150,000. And remember, we have to be, that number really needs to get down below 300,000 for the jobs that are being created to really, you know, take root. Because if you create 244,000 jobs, but 470,000 people lose jobs, you know, you're not exactly gaining traction. So that's, I think, when you look at the numbers and you have a little understanding of the context, really important to take a look at it. All kinds of other news to talk about this week. Boy, price of gas, $4.65 a gallon where I was driving around this week. And I'm going to have a little tour of the whole West. This week I'll be in Salt Lake City, Phoenix, Houston, and Los Angeles. So I'm going to get a good look at what gas prices are doing all over the place and trying to figure out some strategies for all of us to save a little bit of money, besides, of course, not driving. 404-872-0750. If you want to comment on Mother's Day, jobs, gas, housing, mortgages. Mortgage interest rates fell a little bit this week. We're going to talk about that. Mark Tytel is going to be by next hour. He's got some really interesting numbers looking at a little housing forecast coming up this week. All that and more, and a prize pack and all kinds of cool stuff this hour. Well, actually, that's going to be next hour on the Elise Glink Show. 13 minutes past the hour. Let's go to the phones. Matt joins us on the line from Cumming. Hey, Matt.
Hello.
Well, happy Mother's Day to the mother in your life.
Yes, it is, and my wife also.
Very nice. What's on your mind today?
What's going on is I purchased a home back in the end of 2006, right before the economy tanked, and, paid a high price for the home. And then in 2008, actually 2009, 2008, I had a baby, and at the end of the year, and then 2009, I actually lost my job.
Ooh.
And, it was pretty
tough,
hard
tough.
For us.
Yeah.
I did have some money in 401k. We didn't really have a whole lot of savings. So we pretty much had to take out all of my 401k to start, living off of that and just worry about paying, the penalty or whatnot on that the next year.
Right.
And then, you know, with the baby, my wife stopped working. She tried to get a job, and she wasn't able to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
And, we're just wondering what we're going to do, because we had to cash out her 401k, and we're down to, the last little bit to where we won't be able to pay our credit card bills, or we have to choose to what we're going to pay.
Well, are neither of you working again?
I am working. I got a job, pretty much like a couple months after I lost my job.
Okay.
So I was able to get a job. I didn't have to file for unemployment or anything, and but it just wasn't as much as I was making before.
Okay.
So
you're not making as much. She's not working.
That's correct.
And you're not able to pay your bills.
That's right. And we were just wondering what we could do, because we've tried to refinance, you know, with the like last year, whenever they Obama had the plans, the government had the plans to refinance,
right,
and make homes more affordable. But I still made more money than I was able to get that.
Yeah, you just probably wouldn't qualify for that, even
exactly.
though it seems like you would. You don't
exactly.
So I think that the answer here is going to if. One thing you may want to try and figure out is there a job your wife can get to start bringing in some more income? And if not...
She is applying for positions or whatnot. It's just she hasn't been able to get anything. And
right.
We're just looking to see if there's, you know, we have two kids actually now.
Okay.
Instead of just one child. And she pretty much, you know, is a full-time mom.
Right.
So,
well, you know, when you have two children and you have child care and there's nobody to help you out with that,
exactly.
That's really, really hard. I think that the first thing you might want to do is pay a visit or go online and set up an appointment with Consumer Credit Counseling Services of Greater Atlanta, which, by the way, is now called Credibility.
Okay.
Credibility.org. And they do free budgeting. And they can maybe make some suggestions there for you.
Okay.
But I think if you're going to have to choose between mortgage and credit cards, that's a really tough choice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're going to have to think about, and when you talk to them, if you owe a certain amount more than your annual salary, they recommend bankruptcy, and so you may need to think about bankruptcy. You may need to just think about not paying some of those credit card bills. I wouldn't stop paying your mortgage because you stop paying your mortgage, I mean, you're going to be out of a house.
Exactly.
You know, so I think you're going to have to tread very carefully, and I think getting somebody who really can look at all of the numbers for you and help you start to make sense of it is probably the right way to go.
If we do one of those debt consolidation things where they, you know, lower the amount that you owe, it really, like, our credit score is pretty good right now.
Yeah, it's going
to
be pretty bad.
We were able to keep it good. But if we do one of those, I know it's going to hurt our credit score.
It is.
Will it go back up after we're done paying that off, or?
Well, debt management programs like the one from Credibility, isn't of itself is not going to lower your credit score.
Okay.
It's going to lower your credit score is when you stop making payments.
Okay.
So if you go into one with a high credit score, as long as you're going to be making the payments, they may close the accounts, and that may, or they may limit the accounts, so that may affect your credit score because you're going to, you know, have money that you owe, but the credit account isn't going to be open. But eventually, you're going to pay those off, and so your credit score will come back again. And there may be a way to leave the credit, account open, but so that it doesn't really damage it, but not charge anything more on it. I don't know. You have to talk to them about it and see.
Okay.
But they're going to tell you whether that's even possible or not.
Okay.
And that's where you have to start. But it sounds like you guys have had a really, really tough time of it and just some bad luck.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping you can get on the right side of it.
Yeah, I hope so, too. It's just like everything that we've tried, it's just, you know, we just barely missed the mark. And we just, you know, we purchased our home right at the peak of, you know, real estate.
Bad timing.
I know. It's just all bad timing, so.
Well, but you still have your health, and you have your wife and your two kids.
That's right.
Focus on what you can focus on, and there are options out there. And if you pay the price of bad credit for 5 or 7 years, it's not the worst thing in the world.
True. It's not like I'm going to be buying anything anyway.
It just doesn't matter. I mean, you have to really, it's not the be-all, end-all. You have to get your budget in line first and then figure it out from there.
All right, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good luck, Matt. Let me know how it goes, all right? 19 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. Joe joins us on the line from Chamblee. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Luis. I got two things for you. The first is a question. The second is just some information.
Okay.
The first is the question. At the Kroger, I was talking to the manager. Both of these managers are known to me, and he says that need is on the bottom rung of an escalator going up. The damage is done is a direct quote.
Okay.
And I'm wondering what's going to happen with fast food markets with the beef price of beef going crazy. And the second is information from a Walmart manager. I don't know if you have noticed it or not, but there hasn't been any summer plans out in the stores because they didn't put one out. They can't trend the public. That's a direct quote from him. And he says at the present time they don't have a Christmas plan because their Christmas plan is late to the store managers. They don't know what's going to trend Christmas.
The reason that they don't have summer I don't know what you mean when you say they don't have summer plans out.
You know, the big flyers and the things that hang from the ceiling.
Yeah, they don't have any of that. Why is it? Because they didn't think summer was coming this year?
They couldn't trend it.
They couldn't trend it, so they don't know if people are going to be buying or not buying.
Correct.
You know, I think that those are really interesting observations, Joe. You know, in terms of the price of beef going up, I think all commodity prices have been rising dramatically, and I think it will continue to rise. And so I think what's going to happen with fast food restaurants is they're going to raise their prices, and they're going to try and find ways to hold it back, but it's a real problem. The other issue of not understanding where people are going to be for summer and Christmas and buying, I think that there are some real questions about what kind of strength the American consumer actually has after 3 years of basically a recession for everybody except people who live on Wall Street and in D.C., I think. But there's a big, deep recession going on for pretty much most of the country, and I understand their reticence to not overbuy for Christmas because they have no idea if people are actually going to be in the mood or not. It's been three really tough years. I'll talk more about this. We're going to take a short break. Get some weather and traffic in there. We'll come back and I'll talk about this in just a couple of minutes. 21 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink. You're listening to News Talk WSB.
Expert. money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB.
26 minutes past the hour. 404-872-0750. 1-800-WSB-TALK. This Mother's Day weekend. So Joe called the show a few minutes ago. And by the way, lines are wide open, guys. This is a great day to call, Mother's Day. He said he was talking to the manager at Kroger, who said that the price of meat is on the bottom rung of an escalator going up. And how are fast food restaurants going to cope with the price of beef going crazy? And then for the second side of it, he said that if you go into a Walmart, there are no summer promotions going on and that nobody's got a Christmas plan. Because nobody has any idea whether the American consumer is going to be buying anything. And what do I think about that? And I think the answer is that a lot of people don't feel like buying anything. A lot of people are like Matt, who, you know, has lost a job, got a job, making less money. His wife stopped working. They now have two kids. They've cashed in their 401ks. And now they're going to decide between whether they're going to pay their credit card bills or their mortgage payments. A lot of people are losing jobs, and while some people are getting jobs, I think that we are still on this precipice of not feeling like spending a huge amount of money. We have to spend some things, right? Things wear out, and kids outgrow clothes, but we're not really feeling a wash in, you know, happy money times. I can't really say when I look out that everybody's feeling like we're back to normal. I don't think we are back to normal. I think that there are some very odd things going on that are conflicting right now. We certainly are seeing it in real estate. We are not having a resurgence in real estate whatsoever. The number of homes continues to fall, new homes that are falling. The number of pending home sales is up, according to the realtors, but it's still below last year. Overall construction is below last year, and so you're looking at money getting cut back from budgets, federal and state employees being fired, and so I think that people are not really feeling the love, the money love that they are in Wall Street. I heard yesterday about a CEO who made $52 million last year. You know what? I bet he's feeling pretty good. The rest of us, not quite there yet. So I think that if you're going to see prices and commodity prices continue to go up, it's going to be painful. And when you're paying $4.70 a gallon for gas, it doesn't leave a whole lot of extra money in the budget. We'll talk about the price of gas next. I'm Elise Glank, 404-872-0750. Your thoughts on Mother's Day? Call us now. I'm Elise Glank. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
404-872-0750 is our number here at the station. It's 1136. Welcome to the Elise Glink Show on Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. How are you celebrating today? We have my mother and my sister and her family coming over. We're doing a little barbecued chicken and some grilled vegetables and a little rhubarb pie that my sister made. And I hope that you're having a very nice Mother's Day, whatever it is that you're doing. And I'm glad I get to share it with you. It's always nice to spend weekends, these kinds of holiday weekends together. 404-872-0750. Our lines are wide open. Online all the time. ThinkGlink.com. ThinkGlink.com. Don't forget to sign up for the free weekly newsletter. Follow me on Twitter. I'm at GLINK. Check out the brand new ThinkGlink.com. It is up and running. Happy to have you out there and joining us. So crude oil prices dropped 15%. This was the other really big news of the week. It was sort of interesting. We have seen the question is really, why are crude oil prices dropping? And I have to say part of it is due to the dollar. Right, because you know, crude oil is typically priced in dollars. But I also think that President Barack Obama has a little bit to do with it. He said on Friday that high gas prices are sapping the spending power of Americans. True. And he is talking about how high gas prices are eating into paychecks, and it's a headwind. True. And, you know, by being sort of targeting the big oil industry, it makes everybody nervous that something's going to happen. And so, you know, not surprisingly, everybody dumped their whatever they were buying, you know, futures. And so prices went down. But I don't know that that's going to be exactly enough to keep oil prices down for long, especially because as we get into the summer, oil prices tend to rise. But we've seen that gas prices have jumped by more than a gallon over the past year. Retail prices were about $4 a gallon. I told you that, and that's according to AAA. I told you that I paid $4.70-something to fill up my tank the other day. Even at Costco, it was $4.68 to fill up the tank, which is really, really shocking. Out in California, they're already over $5 a gallon. And if I can find a place when I'm out there this week in L.A., driving around, and if I can, I'll be near the airport where they typically charge a little more. If I can find a sign that says gas prices over $5 a gallon, I'll take a picture and post it on the website a little bit later on this week. Obama has called for an end to tax breaks for oil and gas companies. They have made billions and billions of dollars this year, and he has opened a probe of market speculators and urged world producers to raise output. All of this is supposed to help bring down the price of gas. But the truth is, at $4 a gallon, you know, or $5 a gallon, we're starting to get to a price where it makes sense to think about alternative energy again. And it also helps people cut back on their usage. Really makes sense to start carpooling and figuring out other ways to get from place to place. Hopefully people are going to do that. It makes a lot of sense. 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station. Scott joins us on the line from Johns Creek. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. What's going on?
Well, past week, there's been a lot of attention focused on the compensation for CEOs.
Mm-hmm.
I hear you with little jabs at people on Wall Street and how much they're making. But what I always find curious in the media and even on talk show hosts like yourself, where is the outrage, where is the, if you will, frustration with athletes in this country, professional athletes, who are making millions of dollars a year and don't create one single job? I'll take a CEO who is overpaid but at least is creating and keeping a company afloat over some athlete who, like I said, contributes not one single job.
All right, it's a great question. So let's break it down a little bit. First of all, I would argue that not every overpaid CEO makes jobs. And I think you have to agree with that. A lot of times they mess up companies and they still walk away with $20 million or $30 million. Or in the case of Nardelli and Home Depot, $120 million, right? So I definitely think there are CEOs who don't do good and still take a lot of money off the table. And I have a problem with that. CEOs who are making jobs and building companies, I don't have a problem with that. I really don't. And I don't have a problem with CEOs who have made big money because they took stock options instead of salary, and then the stocks of their company go up. That is the right way to incentivize people. When you look at athletes, though, I would argue that, and I have to be perfectly honest, I'm not a huge sports nut person, okay? My son Michael is, but I'm not a huge sports person. But what I do think athletes do, and I think they do create jobs. I do think they create, they provide entertainment. And I think they do, when athletes do well and you have a team that does really well, like the Bulls in Chicago, there are ancillary jobs that fall out of that. And I don't think you're seeing the same level. When you have entertainment, I mean, it's like saying, is Julia Roberts really worth $25 million a movie? Well, when her movies bring in $150 million, there are a lot of ancillary jobs that are created with everything of that, and people would say she's worth that. But, I definitely agree that there are some people in the entertainment industry, and I'll include athletes in that are overpaid. I just don't follow those industries quite as closely as I do on Wall Street. But my big problem on Wall Street is more the attitude of people that they think that Wall Street right now thinks that we're back at 2006 and 2007 and everything is hunky-dory. And I have a problem with that attitude because I look on Main Street and I look at the rest of this country and I don't think everything is back to where it was in 2006 and 2007. So my jabs are about attitude Not quite as much about the money that they make. Although, honestly, does anybody really need to make $2 billion a year in a hedge fund? I think we could have a long conversation about that.
Okay. Well, thanks for your comments.
Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate it. 404-872-0750. It is 43 minutes past the hour. News Talk WSB. Mike joins us on the line. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Elise. Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you very much. What's going on with you today?
I've got a question. Well, I wanted to get your opinion on it. I am looking at a refinance on my house.
Mm-hmm.
Right now I'm paying a 6.75 fix. About 11 and a half years into a 30-year mortgage.
Okay.
It is a starter house. At the time I bought the house, it was what I could comfortably afford. Since then, my income has approximately doubled.
Great.
And I would love to get a much bigger house, but I'm not just going to give away the house that I've paid all these years on. So I'm kind of leaning toward getting a new mortgage on the house, a 15-year mortgage at 4.25 APR fixed. And just riding out the market.
So let me frame it in a slightly different way for you.
Okay.
So I have no trouble with you getting a 15-year at 4.25. Actually, I think they're down a little bit, like at 4% or a little below 4%.
Okay.
I have no trouble with you doing that. But my mother, who has been a top real estate agent for many, many years, would say to you that you're never going to sell high and buy low in the same market at the same time. So your house has walked back a little bit in price, but the new house you're going to buy has walked back in the same percentage way, a much bigger dollar amount. So let's say you bought your house for $100,000 and today it's worth $75,000. And let's just assume you have positive equity, because you probably do.
Right, yeah.
The new house you want to buy was $500,000, now it's $300,000.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saving on the buy side $200,000 while losing maybe $25,000 on the sell side.
Right.
In a financial world, that's considered a very good deal. Now,
okay. You
have a way to make that deal an even better deal. How much do you have left on your mortgage?
$67,000.
$67,000, if you can even get a new mortgage, because I have to say that it's pretty hard these days to get a mortgage for less than about $70,000, $75,000. But let's just say you can get a new mortgage for $60,000 at 4.25%.
Right.
I guarantee that you can probably rent out your house, cover all of your expenses, and ride out the market while you buy your new house.
Yeah, that's option B.
I love a plan B.
I hate the idea of only rental property. I just don't want the headache that are associated with it, But
you'd be in a positive, you'd be in a cash positive position, and if you're going to ride it out, I don't want you to ride it out in the starter house to get back $25,000 when you could be buying a $300,000 house that in the same amount of time will go up to $500,000.
Yeah, that's what I'm leaning towards.
That's the better, if you look at it, if you really can't let the house go, and I think it's okay to let this house go and not... You know, if you're ahead on it and you're taking cash out, it's okay to let it go and make it on the other side.
Right.
That's a great position to be in. But if you just, for some reason, can't let go of that $25,000, and I'm making up the numbers, obviously, because I don't know what the numbers are. But
sure.
Rent it out for a little bit of time or do a lease with an option to buy and try and find a family that wants to stay in that house.
Right.
And give them a great deal. And over 3 years, they're going to buy it from you.
Yeah.
And then you're out, you're in the new house, and you're doing great. I just think that there is a way that you can have your cake and eat it, too. You're one of the rare people. You're in a great position. I just want you to think about it in a little bit different way.
Yeah. Okay, great advice. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling the show, and happy Mother's Day to the moms in your life. 46 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Seth joins us on the line from Lawrenceville. Hi, Seth.
Hey, Elise. Happy Mother's Day. I love your name.
Thank you, and thank you very much. I like my name, too.
I've got a question about a mortgage that I started making payments on in August of 2010.
Mm-hmm.
I'm basically on a fixed 30-year mortgage at 4.75%. My mortgage is about $1,100, and
did that include taxes and insurance?
No, well, with taxes and insurance, I'm paying about $1,750 a month because the home was valued at about $430,000 at that time, and now it's, you know, I bought it for $230,000, so
great.
I got a really good deal on a house. And anyway, I was with my dad this weekend, and he was telling me about what he does with his mortgage, and he goes through something called LIBOR, and I'm a little unfamiliar with it, but he's in a house that's valued at about the same amount as mine, and he's paying about $450 a month.
Okay, yeah. Let me stop you right here. A LIBOR stands for the London Interbank Offered Rate, and it is a variable rate mortgage. And the reason he is not paying very much is that he's probably got like 2.5% on his mortgage right now. But LIBOR is very, very flexible, and it moves very quickly. And he could quit if interest rates jump up. He's going to be paying a whole lot more than you pretty darn quickly. I don't want you to give up a loan. You have a 4.75% 30-year fixed rate mortgage. If you want to make more out of that, prepay your mortgage. Cut down the years from 30 year to 15 years, and you'll be in better shape. Do not go to a LIBOR. It's way too much risk for you for a house you're going to be in a long time. Trust me.
Okay, well, that's good advice. He told me that, you know, right now it's at 0.29%
It won't stay there.
Okay.
It will not stay there. I'm paying, I have one loan that's a variable rate mortgage. It's an ARM. And it, I don't know if it's LIBOR or not, but it's seriously like 3.125% or 3.25% or something. But yet I switched my main house loan from a 30-year to a 15-year at 3.75%. Okay?
Wonderful.
And you know what? I'm never getting rid of it because I know that this is like free money, and that's how you should look at this 30-year rate. The only change I would have you make is to refinance to a 15-year at about 4%. But I don't even think you should do that. Your rate is good. You're doing fine as long as you can afford the payments. There is no easy money there. You, Seth, have a great loan. Be happy with it. Forget about it. Just make your payments every month and think to yourself, wow, because in 5 years, when interest rates are a lot higher than they are now, everybody's going to be going, man, you're the guy, Seth. Look at your interest rate, 4.75%. Wish I had that loan. And you're going to feel great about it. So tell your dad, good for him, and this is good for you. We've got news, weather, and traffic coming up at the top of the hour this Sunday in today's Atlanta Journal-Constitution. There's an investigative report on legislators who owe the state money. Really, guys? Really? Read all about it in this week's, in today's Atlanta Journal-Constitution. 10 before the hour on AM 750, now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Your mama don't dance and your daddy don't rock and roll.
55 minutes past the hour. News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Link. Happy Mom's Day, everybody. 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. Alex joins us on the line. Hey, Alex. Welcome to the Elise Link Show. What's going on today?
Hi. I'm currently 21 years old, and I have around $4,500 saved up, in which was previously a 401k, and now it's IRA because I left that employer.
Okay.
I'm in the market to buy a home in around $45,000 to $55,000 price range, a foreclosure or short sale.
Okay.
I'm going to ask if it made sense to withdraw that money for a cash down payment, since you can withdraw it for a hardship withdrawal with no penalties.
Actually, for an IRA, you can withdraw. Is this your first home? You're a first time buyer.
Yes.
You can withdraw up to $10,000. From an IRA for a first-time home purchase. You won't pay the penalty, but you will have to pay tax on the money.
Yeah, okay.
So you'll get some of that, but let's say you may wind up with only $3,000 after tax. But you won't have to pay the tax on it until next April 15th.
Uh-huh.
So
do you think that's a good idea to get a bigger cash down payment?
Well, how much do you have for the down payment without that?
I have around $15,000, which is enough for the 20%.
Yeah, no, then I would leave the IRA money where it is And I would just use the, you know, you've got plenty of cash. I don't think you need to pay taxes on top of that with the IRA money.
Uh-huh.
I'd like you to save that IRA money. You're 21 years old, but in 50 years when you're 71, provided you have it invested in, like, just regular, you know, index mutual fund, that money could be worth, you know, $300,000 in 50 years. Leave it.
Yeah, I understand. I was just wanting to know if I should keep more cash in the bank or keep a...
Listen, you can always liquidate an IRA.
Uh-huh, okay.
So, but I don't think you need to, and if you're buying, you know, have you looked at HUD homes? Because with a HUD home, you could put down as little as $500 if you wanted to.
Yeah, I was more interested in the conventional.
Okay. Conventional loans, I love it. And 20% down is a great thing to be able to put down. But if you're going to buy, you know, a $55,000 house, let's say, or $50,000 house, 20% is $10,000. You've got $15,000,
yep,
which is enough for your reserves and some cash for the closing costs, and you're in great shape.
Okay, sounds good.
You are doing great, and I have a tremendous feeling, very solid feeling, that financially you're going to do just fine in your life. You're making some great moves early on, and it's going to come back and pay off for you.
Yes, I actually graduated Georgia State University yesterday, so...
Congratulations! What did you graduate in?
Excuse me?
What's your degree in?
I have double, accounting and finance.
Alex, we are going to be looking to you for big things. You're going to do great. Congratulations.
Yeah, you and Clark Howard, you know, I really listen to you guys and take your advice.
Well, on behalf of Clark, I have to say that we're very flattered. I'm thrilled that we've been able to help you get to a place where you're 21 years old, you're out of school, you got 15 grand saved, and you're buying a house, and you're making smart, smart moves. I'm bursting with pride. I'm not your mom. I guess I could be, but I'm not your mom. But I have to say, your parents must be very proud of you. What a great Mother's Day gift. 58 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Blank. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Mamma mia.
Live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB. Brought to you by Mark Tytel with Realty First.
Minutes past the hour, 12:07 this Mother's Day. Welcome back to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. Our number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time, the brand new, all redone, better search engine, Elise Glink's thinklink.com is up and running, folks. It went up on Friday. Go take a look. Tell me what you think. Mostly the design is very, very similar, but the whole website should just work better. The search engine is better. We've got some new and easier ways for you to find the information you're looking for. We've got a new news feed that's going to have just news stories that we post, and, of course, the blog is up there as well. So lots of great places for you to go, and, of course, 6,000 or 8,000 pages of information for you. You can still leave comments. There's just, you know, great places to go at thinklink.com. So go online, take a look, share it, like it. You can now like all the stories. You can, it's all very socially friendly. We want you to join the ThinkLink community and starting out at thinklink.com. Twitter, Facebook, all the rest is a great thing and a great way to go. So this week on the Equifax Personal Finance blog, my good friend Linda Ray, who writes the insurance stuff, talked about how to resolve a claims dispute with your insurance provider. And when she talks about this, it's kind of interesting because she sells insurance. She's been in the business for, it's a second generation. She works out on the East Coast. I think she's licensed in New Jersey, New York, maybe Connecticut. And I think the idea of claims disputes is sort of interesting, particularly now when you look at the flooding issue. We've had torrential thunderstorms in Atlanta, but you look at Mississippi and tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of acres are going underwater. Mississippi is still weeks away from cresting. They're trying to save a whole town of 3,000 people, Cairo, Illinois. It's just, it's crazy. And this is really going to come back on the insurance world as folks start filing claims. But the interesting thing that Linda talks about in this piece, and you can find it at equifax.com/blog, and I will put up a link on the website as well on the blog today. But when she talks about claims, it's interesting how, you know, the idea that there are some people who pay their premiums for years, never file a claim, and then some people, she says, seem like they're filing a claim every other minute. And if you have a client with too many claims and they get dropped by the insurance agent, Linda says that she hears the same complaint. She pays the premium, you know, somebody pays the premium, they should get the benefit. But what she's found in these years of working with clients who have claims is that sometimes all you really need is better communication to solve a claims dispute or to speed up a processing delay. So, for example, Linda tells the story that she had a client who was told her claim was denied because of an oversight that needed to be reviewed by the underwriter. But the client called Linda, she reviewed it, and she discussed the case with the underwriter, and they were able to process the claim. So she was able to act as an intermediary and actually get this client's claim processed. So she has a couple of suggestions and some things you can do if you need to file a claim dispute. One is review your policy carefully to determine if your claim is indeed covered. If the fine print, she says, can be really tricky, and there are things that you can do that invalidate your insurance coverage. So you want to make sure that you're not invalidating the insurance coverage and that it's actually covered. Second thing is you want to keep track of all the paperwork related to the policy and the incident requiring the claim. And this could include police reports, medical charts, witness statements, damage estimates, payment records. The more data that you can provide to back up the claim, more likely you're going to be to get a payment settlement. Number three, document all contact with the insurance company. You know, we've talked for years on this show about how important your paper trail is. And that's really just recording the dates and times of phone calls, names, extensions, locations of the offices, outcomes of the calls, save any emails, paper mail from the insurance company. More proof is better. And then finally, this sounds like it might be a little silly, but you have to just keep calm. As angry as you get or frustrated, and problems can make people get very irritated, as my mother and grandmother always like to say, you're going to catch more flies with honey than with vinegar. And so if you can stay calm, you're much more likely, Linda says, to get the desired effect and the desired result. You just have to be firm and persistent, but calm and always, always polite. Because if you're not polite, you're not getting anywhere. Linda has a bunch of other links on this page, so just take a look at the Equifax Personal Finance blog, equifax.com/blog. Click on insurance, and her blog will come up. And as somebody who's been an expert in this field for a couple of decades, she's just got some great information that is free and she'd like to share with you. 404-872-0750. Let's continue on with our calls. 12 minutes past the hour. Tom joins us on the line from Kennesaw. Hi, Tom.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm having a great Mother's Day. What about you?
Well, not too bad for a day at work.
Okay. Well, I'm working too. Does that make you feel better?
you do what you got to do.
That's right. What's on your mind today?
I'm sorry?
What's on your mind? How can I help you?
What's on my mind?
What's on your mind?
About 2 years ago, my wife and I went through because of some medical reasons, we had to file Chapter 7 bankruptcy.
Mm.
We have a mortgage currently with one of the major mortgage companies, but during the bankruptcy process, the mortgage itself was never reaffirmed.
Okay.
No paperwork was signed, nothing, and from my understanding from our attorney, the debt was actually discharged. And we've been in the home for 5 years, we're underwater, and have continued to make payments, you know, on time, never late. But my question is, what is the liability? What's our real liability towards this mortgage at this point, since it was discharged in the bankruptcy?
So the mortgage, let me see if I understand correctly. The mortgage was discharged in the bankruptcy and never reaffirmed. Really?
Correct.
So, technically, you don't have a mortgage anymore.
We're just renting the house, basically.
You're just renting the house. Is the lender aware of that?
I guess so, because I double-checked back with, because we had a plan to do the dealer reaffirmation.
Okay.
And there was no paperwork. It was not offered, and it was never done.
And the deed on the house is still in your name?
Yes.
But there's no mortgage attached to it?
Well, I guess there is, because we keep getting a bill every month on the mortgage, you know, with the... Well, we get a mortgage statement every month from Bank of America.
Have you looked at the... I guess what I would do is go and take a look and see if there's a lien attached to the property, to the mortgage. Have you done that yet?
No.
So if the... Okay, and I'm not a lawyer, but I'm just going to go out on a limb here. If the bankruptcy judge had really discharged the mortgage, then there shouldn't be a valid mortgage lien attached to the property. If there is one attached to the property, I would say that either the reaffirmation was done, even if you don't have the paperwork, somebody else might, or it was done in just that way that so much has been done with mortgages over the last 5 years. Where you just weren't included in on the process somehow, and so that would be my sense of it. But that would be the first place to start. And then I would hire a real estate attorney for a couple of hours to ask you to track it back, because until you know for sure, there's no way that you can make an intelligent decision about where to go next.
Yeah, because it's dawning on me that we're just basically renting a home that we're underwater in.
Yeah.
My concern is, what's our actual liability on this? If we try to sell the house, or if we just...
Well, if there's no lien...
Or what, you know?
Right. If there's no lien on the property, mortgage lien on the property, and nothing's attached to it, I would say to you that there's probably been a mistake made here, and some fancy attorney from this mortgage company could probably get these things straightened out in court, and then you're going to be, you know, in bigger trouble. So that's why I want you to talk to an attorney who actually knows something. Do you know a real estate attorney?
No, I don't.
So the way to find one is to call the Atlanta Bar Association and ask...
Well, I mean, I know a closing attorney.
You could start with a closing attorney and talk to him about, or her, about how this actually happened, and have, you know, see what he would charge or she would charge to go back and try and track it back.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the key is what kind of lien is attached to the mortgage at this moment? You know, what kind of mortgage lien is attached to the property?
Okay.
And that's an important thing to find out.
Okay. All right. Well, that'll be my next step then.
All right.
Okay.
Let me know how it goes.
Thank you.
All right. Have a great one. 17 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Will joins us on the line from Stone Mountain. Hey, Will.
How you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm outside working on my screen, though, and got a good question. I 14 and a half years left on my house.
Okay.
At 6%. It wouldn't benefit me with trying to refinance and get a lower interest rate. The reason why I didn't do it earlier, because that work was sporadic, and I wouldn't have been able to probably get a loan, but I'm back working now, and I might could refinance to lower the interest rate.
Are you asking me if you should?
Yeah.
Well, I would only refinance to a 15-year loan, and then I would... you probably could lower it by 2 percentage points,
mm-hmm.
and it would probably be worthwhile to do.
Do you think it'd be worthwhile with only having 14 and a half years left on my 30-year loan?
Yeah, I think it would, because you may not save any time, right? You're not shaving time off the loan, although you might be able to get a 10-year loan.
Okay, because I'm sending an extra 50 to 200 a month on my principal.
So you're already getting a tremendous benefit. I think it's worth asking the question.
Okay.
So the question you want to ask, or you can go online and take a look and do the numbers yourself, but the question that you want to ask is, what happens if I refinance with you? How much will it cost? What's the interest rate I could get, and what's my monthly payment? So let's say you get a 15-year loan at 4%.
Okay.
And you're able to lower the monthly payments by $100.
Okay.
Is it worth refinancing?
Okay.
And if you can pay off the refinance with the savings in 6 months, then I would say there's no reason not to, because you're going to stay in this house, and then you're going to have that much more extra money to keep plowing towards the mortgage.
So you said 15 years at 4%,
I think
I can pay off the cost at... And
yeah, I think that you could probably refinance your mortgage, your 15-year mortgage, for about 4 or 4.25%.
Okay.
And if you refinance that mortgage, and you're able to lower your payment, I think that it would be worthwhile, don't you?
Yes, but what would be the payoff point? How many months?
Well, how much do you have left on your mortgage? I'll do this for you right now on eLoan.com.
I don't have the balance left. I just know I'm 14 and a half years left.
But how much was your original mortgage for?
I think it was at 86 or 96,000.
All right, let's say it was at 100,000, and let's say now you have $50,000 left.
Okay.
And you're going to refinance that at 4.25%
mm-hmm.
for 15 years. How much do you pay right now?
$758, taxes and insurance included.
$758 with taxes and insurance. And how much if you take out the taxes and insurance? $500?
Yes, probably around $500.
Okay. The monthly payment on a $50,000 loan at 4.25, 15 years, is $376.14.
Okay, and then I would have to add tax and insurance back into it.
Right, but you're saving probably $100 to $150 bucks a month.
I'm saving about $100 to $150.
You might save $100 to $150 a month.
Now,
so if it costs, but now let's say it costs you $2,000 to refinance.
Okay.
And you're going to save $150 a month. It's going to take you about 14 months to pay off the cost of that.
Okay, so it'd be worth it then.
I think it's worth it. You might even be able to go to 4.5%, but pay almost nothing.
Okay, 4.5%.
And then you save $100 a month from day one.
I think that
might make sense. So now I need you to go and ask the question. Because until you ask the question, you won't really know if it's the right move for you or not. So you only need $50,000. That's not a very big amount. And you want a 15-year loan. You may even be able to do a 10-year. And then you just want to see what it's going to cost you to do it and call a couple of places and see. And if there's a credit union belong to that you can do, it's probably cheaper there. You may just even want to see what your own lender can do for you. And just ask the question. Until you ask, you never know. 404-872-0750, 21 minutes past the hour. We're going to do our McDonald's WSB weekend prize pack coming up next. Stay tuned for that on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
26 minutes past the hour, we're going to do our WSB McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack. Great prize this Mother's Day weekend. And if you haven't gotten your wife or mom anything special, maybe you could win this for her instead. It includes a pair of tickets to tour the Marietta Art and Design Show House and Lawrence House Art and Jewelry Gallery now through May 22nd, a Kroger $50 gift card, a four-pack of tickets to the Georgia Renaissance Festival now through June 5th, and an auto car wash $25 gift card. Total prize value, $195. That's a nice Mother's Day gift. It can all be yours if you are the fifth caller at 404-741-0750. Be nice to Alan. He's going to answer your call today. And good luck this Mother's Day. 27 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. Let's see if we can do a quick call before we go to break. Stan joins us on the line. Hey, Stan, what's on your mind today?
Okay, how are you doing?
Good, thanks.
That's good. My question is this. I actually live in Colorado, and I just happen to be here for Mother's Day. And I have a lot. It's 2.5 acres worth of land. And, back a few years ago, well, even now, actually, the housing market's really, really bad in Colorado. So we had a lot of people from California move out and buy homes and artificially inflate the market. And then they've left, so we've just had a real hard time.
In other words, it's just like Georgia.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so you've got 2.5 acres, and what do you want to do with it?
Okay, well, the thing of it is, I wanted to build a home on it. It's in a nice neighborhood. The houses in the neighborhood, they actually purchased the homes in the neighborhood about $500,000 to $600,000. And now they're only worth about $400,000 to $500,000. So
uh-huh.
The lot itself, and without using true numbers,
we'll just say that the county, Arapahoe County, appraised my lot at $100,000, and but I bought it at $50,000. So what I was told is that it's best that I wait for a full 1 year in order to get the full value out of the lot itself, to use it as like a down payment towards a home.
Okay, so are you going to sell the lot and buy a house?
No, I wanted to build on that lot. So
all right, so let me jump in and say that if you have a lot that is supposedly going to have value in it, that's awfully nice, but there are no lenders out there that I know of that will allow you to use a $50,000 equity in a vacant lot as a construction loan. It's not what it's going to build. It's not going to be built on that. I'll talk about this a little bit more when we come back. It's 29 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glenk. You're listening to News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglenk.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
6 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glenk. This is the Elise Glenk Show, Mother's Day edition. Happy Mom's Day to everybody out there. We were on the phone with Stan, who lives in Colorado, but he's here for Mom's Day. He owns a lot in Colorado with 2.5 acres and wants to build on it. He bought the lot on sale at $50,000. He's now told it's probably worth $100,000, and he wanted to use it as a down payment of sorts on which to get build a house for himself. And unfortunately, Stan, as I mentioned before we went to the break, it's very unlikely that right now lenders will do that. What they do is take the lower of either the purchase price or the actual value of a lot. Borrowing against a vacant lot is very, very difficult to do. So what you might get is you might get a construction loan anyway on the lot. So, for example, the homes are selling for, let's say, $400,000. You have $50,000 in the lot. You want to build a house for $200,000, right? So the whole thing would be $250,000. You may get a lender who can do a construction to permanent loan for that, because when they appraise the plans, it looks like the house will be worth $400,000 when it's done, and that's what everything is going for in the neighborhood. That's probably more likely. In a year, and maybe this also happened back in the the early 2000s, there would have been a time where you could have gotten a loan for $50,000 on a $50,000 lot that was valued at $100,000. Today it's not happening. I can't tell you if in a year we're going to be in a place where that's going to happen again, but I do think that you can easily look into construction to permanent loans and try to get something that would make sense for you. 37 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. Darlene joins us on the line. Darlene, welcome to the program.
Hey, Elise, how you doing?
Fine, how are you?
Hey, I'm just fine. I caught the end of the conversation with the young man that was asking about the reaffirmation.
He had filed for bankruptcy,
right,
and the mortgage was never reaffirmed.
Okay. I think I understood him to say what was his liability for the house.
He was wondering.
Okay. Same thing happened to me. I had went through a bankruptcy. I thought my loan was reaffirmed, but when I went to apply for a modification, I was told by my lender, we can't work with you because your loan has never been reaffirmed. So I went back to the attorney that represented me for the bankruptcy. Come to find out, it wasn't. They tried to get the mortgage people to reaffirm it, but they didn't reaffirm it. I asked him why. He basically said, some banks do, some don't, pretty much. Well, I was very upset at the time. I wanted to keep my home, but the attorney told me, well, actually, you're not in a bad situation as you think you are, he said, because what it means is that you could continue to pay if you want to, but if you decide to walk away, they can't come after you for the deficiency or for anything. So anyway, long story short, I ended up, since I was underwater, I ended up letting it go. I did find some paperwork that I didn't even read it, but on my bank statement, the bank was continuing to give me statements, and I was continuing to make my mortgage payment, but on the very bottom of the statement, in real tiny letters, it said, if you have been through bankruptcy, which they knew about that, they said, and your loan was not reaffirmed, then we will exercise our right to get the property, but we will not come after you for the you know, for anything
the
else.
Deficiency.
But, right. Mm-hmm. So, and that's exactly what happened. They didn't. They threatened at first, but, you know, I wrote them and told them, you know, you can't have it both ways. You didn't reaffirm the loan, so you can't, and they didn't.
Wow. Well, that is actually a little bit of a silver lining.
Yeah.
But not much.
Right. Okay.
But thank you for sharing that story, and hopefully Tom will take some heart out of that because he has to figure out where he wants to be.
Yeah.
And are you a mom today?
I am.
Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you so much, and same to you.
Thank you, Darlene. Thanks for sharing your story. 40 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. John joins us on the line from McDonough. Hi, John.
Elise, this is John's wife, Lavone.
Oh, hi. How are you?
I'm fine. We have some properties in Henry County in Georgia,
mm-hmm.
which it is a high foreclosure short sale county. It's
okay.
about second or third in the nation in foreclosures.
Mm-hmm.
We live in one house. Right next door, I have my mother's house, and we also own a house that my daughter just moved out of.
Okay.
And we are trying to sell all three houses. My mother's house is in real estate, and we haven't got an offer on it in 9 months, and she's in an assisted living. My daughter has moved out of the other one. We have it ready to sell or rent, and we have never rented property before. We checked in the property management companies, and we're finding they're not even licensed. She don't even have to have a license.
Right.
And we don't know what to do with these houses. The value has dropped almost half in Henry County. Yet they keep the property taxes still just like they were, if not higher.
Have you contested your property taxes?
We are going to do that. We just got all new reassessments.
Because they'll never drop it on their own, pretty much.
Mm.
That's like, you know, that's like a blue moon that would happen. So you have to actually actively go and fight your property taxes to get that to come down.
Okay. Our question is, which is what we want to do as far as the property taxes. But with these houses, should we go ahead and sell them? All the houses are paid for. And just let them go, or should we really get into the rental business?
Where are you guys moving to?
Tennessee. My husband and I are retired, and we own two properties there, and my daughter is already up there living in one of them, and we're moving in the other one.
Okay, so the question is, who's going to manage the properties up here? And can you actually handle the whole idea of just continuing to rent them? And if you're in Henry County and you've got all kinds of you know, foreclosures in your own neighborhood, it's going to be very, very hard for you to see any appreciation in prices anytime soon. So if the properties are paid for, I think you might want to just, and you're leaving the state, sell them for whatever you can get and move on and retire. If you, on the other hand, don't mind managing the properties from Tennessee, and it's not going to be that far away, then you should keep them and rent them out, and you can even charge a little less in rent than you would have as long as they take care of the problems with the property. But I generally don't like that idea because nobody's here to watch them for you. And you know what?
Right.
This isn't an asset. I'm not so sure it's such a great idea. One idea might be to do a lease with an option to buy, where you're looking for somebody who really wants to buy the house but doesn't have enough of the down payment, and you can structure a deal where you say, this is what we'll sell it to you for, give us a non-refundable option fee, here's the rent, it's below market, you take care of the property like it's your own, and we'll sell it to you next year. And then you might be able to get a little bit more than you would if you just out and out sold it. And it might take less time as well.
Okay.
But again, you're still, you know, you still own those properties until they do, and so you're going to have to really manage it. And so I don't know if you want to do that. I really don't.
What about these property management companies?
I think there are very few that do well. In one of our, we had some property managers who we worked with in Gwinnett County, for one of our How to Profit from Foreclosure sale events. And I think on our website, I'm trying to think of where, you know where their names are? If you go to realworldseminars.com, which is the event site we have, and I can try and remember to put a link there from today's blog post. You can get their information there, and you can go and talk to them. Now, I don't know if they work in Henry County. They're in Gwinnett, but maybe they could. I know they're good people because we had them speak at our event. I only have really good people speak at our events. Maybe they could recommend somebody who's closer to you.
Okay.
Who would be legitimate. But the thing you have to remember about property management companies is that they're managing a lot of properties. You might not get the kind of attention you want. You're going to have to pay for everything.
Right.
So maybe you'll collect 10 months worth of rent or 6 months worth of rent after you pay the taxes and the insurance and you pay their fee, because they'll usually charge 1 month's rent. So you have to decide if you're going to go through all that and take on the liability for 6 months worth of rent payments. And maybe it's fine because the houses are paid off, so it doesn't matter. And you're just waiting and buying time until the market improves. But these are all the questions you need to ask the real, you know, the agent, the property manager, and you need to think about it yourself and how much you and your husband and your daughter really want to put into this.
Okay.
And it could, and be aware, it could take you 6 months or longer to sell these properties.
Well, my mother's house has been in the market for 9 months, and we don't even have an offer.
Right.
We can't compete against these foreclosures.
Well, that's the price point you would have to compete at. So if you don't want to lower your price and give it away, then you're going to need to think about renting in a more serious way.
Okay.
But there are a lot of details to take, you know, a lot of details. So you want to be very, very cautious and careful because, of course, you've put so much into having these properties and paying them off, and I don't want to see an asset like that disappear entirely simply because you left somebody to manage it and they just didn't do a very good job.
Right. So you're saying that it would probably be best just to hold on to these properties and then rent them.
No, I'm not saying it's better. I'm saying that you have to decide what you're willing to do. So if the properties, how much do you think the properties that you could get, what are the foreclosures in the neighborhood selling for?
$150,000 and $60,000 houses are selling in the 80s now.
Okay. So if you want to let these three properties go for $80,000, you can probably sell them. So you have to decide if you don't mind doing that and getting three houses sold, you'll net out $70,000 each. So you'll walk away with $200,000. And if you don't mind that and you're going to go to Tennessee and live there, then you should sell them.
Okay.
And if it's bugging you and that you can't live with giving away that much money, then you're going to have to look at renting. But renting, remember, you still have taxes and insurance. You're still going to have to do all the other things you're going to have to do to maintain the houses. And by the way, on your mom's vacant house that she's trying to sell, I hope you've switched the insurance to vacant house insurance, because if you haven't and that house goes up in flames, you'll have no coverage for it.
Okay. Her house insurance is just about to come due, so I need to do that.
Do it immediately, even if it's not coming due. You can't have a house that's vacant for 9 months where she's not living in it, and then if something happens, you will not have any coverage.
Okay.
So go check on that tomorrow.
I sure will.
All right. Thanks so much for calling. I hope this works out for you. I'm sure it will. It just may not work out quite the way that you had thought. And unfortunately, that is the reality of the real estate market these days, where it's just not quite working out the way that we want it to. So we've got news, weather, and traffic coming up at the top of the hour. Today's Atlanta Journal-Constitution has an investigative report on legislators, elected officials, who actually owe the state money. Really, guys? Come on. Pay it up. It's 10 before the hour, AM 750, and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
What's all these crazy questions?
1253 on Mother's Day here on News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Happy Mother's Day to everybody out there and to the moms in your life. We have Mark Tatel joining us today. Mark is with GetOutStartOver.com. He's our local foreclosure and short sale expert. He does hundreds of these a year. Mark, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
And happy Mother's Day to you and yours.
Thank you. Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about what's going on in your office this week. What do you see going on with real estate for the spring and summer market?
That's exactly the springtime for us as a real estate brokers is a very excited time. We all have an expectations on how is that real estate going to look like this spring and the summer. And the recent statistic number shows that this is not a very good year. It's not going to be a very pretty picture, especially because we're going to have a home buying season that we have no home buyer tax credit since 2008.
That's a really great point, because those home buyer tax credits, even though I don't think they were that effective, they did do something for the marketplace, and now they're not here anymore.
That is correct. And what we're looking at, especially from the Realty Tracks number, that Georgia has about 70,662 foreclosures right now on the market.
Wow, that is a huge number, and I assume the vast majority of those are in Atlanta metro area.
That's correct. Not only it is a vast majority, but we have almost twice as much foreclosures in our major Atlanta metropolitan counties than any other counties around the state.
Right. So we're looking at, you know, what are we looking at in terms of, like in Fulton County, how many foreclosures are there?
Well, in Fulton County, we have about 1,712 foreclosures, and that is one in every 260 housing units.
But Gwinnett has even more on a relative basis, right?
That is correct. We have 1,524 foreclosures, but only one in every 190 housing units.
So that's I mean, it's not anywhere near where Las Vegas is. I mean, Las Vegas, it's about one in every 17 housing units is a foreclosure. But what I think the worst number that I've seen lately is that foreclosed property sales account for almost 35% of all the activity going on, and that's up from about 20% last year. That's not good for prices, is it?
Absolutely. Market has not regained enough footing to withstand the strain of high property of foreclosure sales.
So a high percentage of foreclosure sales. So what does that mean in terms of what you're seeing walk through your door? Are buyers just paying less?
Buyers will have a great time finding a good prices with the low interest rates for the mortgages, like under 5% for 30 years fixed and under 4% for 15 years. So buyers will have a steal of the deals all summer long. So that's a good news for the buyers.
What would you say to, I know you were listening to our last caller, she and her husband own these three properties in Henry County. She says they're worth about half of what she thinks they should be worth. They're all paid off, and she was trying to decide between selling them to try and compete with the foreclosure sale price. What do you think about Henry? You know, Henry isn't on your list of that, but what do you think about what's going on in Henry County?
Well, I believe Henry County is probably going to be slower to get out of the mess than in Fulton, DeKalb, Gwinnett, or even Cobb County. So I think it's a matter of the decision that and you pointed out very rightly to this particular caller that it is the decision to make right now whether you want to hold on to the property or just sell it and move on. If that would be my property, if that would be the decision I have to make, and I'm moving out of the state, I would probably cut my losses and move on. It's not like I'm walking with no money at all. It's just that it is the situation like that, and I would make that decision versus to keep renting and spending money on the maintenance.
I just can't imagine with Henry County particularly having, you know, such a high percentage of foreclosures and short sales all around her. I just can't see her coming right side up. I can't see her property appreciating in value. It might be 10 or 15 years.
Absolutely. And the rural areas are much more difficult to get out of unemployment situation that we have, because all the employment is concentrated right here in the metropolitan Atlanta area, which is DeKalb, Gwinnett, Fulton, those counties. So
right.
Henry and all surrounding counties are suffer more than the closer counties.
So you would have her move out. I kind of think cutting your losses, and I tried to explain that earlier in the show to a different caller, you know, you're not going to be able to sell high, buy low in the same marketplace, but if you can buy low and sell low and you're actually buying a bigger house, it kind of works in your favor to make the move now as opposed to kind of holding on and waiting. I just think people make this mistake that housing prices are going to come back as fast as stock prices have come back, and it's just not going to be the case.
Absolutely right on the money.
All right. Mark, thank you so much for joining us again. Mark Tatel is the managing broker of Realty First. His website, getoutstartover.com. He knows it all when it comes to foreclosures and short sales. And if you have questions, give him a call. Mark, we'll talk to you again next week. Happy Mother's Day to everybody in your life. And folks, I hope you have a happy Mother's Day. Check out our brand new thinkglink.com website, thinkglink.com. I'm going to put up some show notes in a little while, some links, and some phone numbers as always. Don't forget the Equifax personal finance blog and my blog at moneywatch.com, where I blogged about somebody who is selling houses for a $1 down payment. Poor developers. That's all I can say about that. I'll speak to you guys again next week. And in the meantime, be safe and save money. Take care. Have a great week.